Welcome to the fourth annual Locked On Podcast Network NBA Mock Draft. Bigger and better than ever.
You are Locked On NBA, your daily NBA podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
It's day two of the Locked On Podcast Network NBA Mock Draft. I'm David Locke. Chad Ford is standing by at the Chad Ford NBA Big Board Draft. John Hollinger is standing by to give us any analysis if trades go down. And we've got the expert desk of Brad Rollin, Brendan Kleen, and Josh Lloyd with you as we break down each and all the picks. Scheduled right now, but trade rumors are flying. Detroit with a seventh pick. Chad Ford said after three picks of this draft that James Wiseman and Tyrese Haliburton were his top two players left on the board. And yet, Chicago passed on him, Cleveland passed on him, and Atlanta passed on him. So those two are still there. So we know that Chad Ford's big board has Wiseman and Haliburton as the two best available players. Will Detroit do that? Will New York get their man? Washington, Phoenix, San Antonio, and Sacramento are all scheduled. We're joined now by Brad Rollin of Locked On Hawks. He also writes for the NBA Draft for Dime. Brendan Kleen of Locked On Suns. He also writes on the NBA Draft for Fansided. And Josh Lloyd, who writes for Red Rock Basketball and hosts the great Locked On Fantasy Basketball. Guys, are you as surprised as Chad Ford is that James Wiseman and Tyrese Haliburton are still here as we start day number two? Brendan, lead us off.
It's hard to imagine him staying on the board much longer. To me, you know, there's a lot of questions about him. We all know, you know, only a few games at Memphis, an up and down tenure there. He's effectively not played competitive basketball for a year now because of the way his college tenure played out. So a lot of questions and decision-making things, but, you know, he's a freak athlete. He's a 7-foot guy who can play defense. Those guys are still valuable in this league. I would be really surprised in our mock draft or on draft night if he falls much lower than this.
I'd be pretty stunned if on draft night he falls this low, but I don't think it's the wrong decision to have him this low. Brendan said he plays good defense. I think he's a good shot blocker. I'm not sure about his actual overall defense. I think that's going to be part of the problem with Wiseman, and that's why I would push him down there. Haliburton, I'm not surprised at all. I have significant concerns about him. So I think they're probably in the right spot to me, still being available after the first six picks.
All right, who are the top six players left on your board after day one? Brad Rollin, give it to us.
Yeah, I think this is kind of flat, but at the same time, you have to put a board together in some respects. I will say James Wiseman, Denny Avdija, Obi Toppin, Tyrese Haliburton, Tyrese Maxey, and Patrick Williams would be my six coming up here.
Josh Lloyd, how about you?
I've got Avdija, Wiseman, Kyra Lewis, Alexei Pokusevsky, Patrick Williams, and Tyrese Haliburton.
And Brendan?
Yeah, I'll go Wiseman, Avdija. I'll throw Tyrell Terry in the mix there. I'll go Tyrese Maxey as well. And then I don't know if I have it down this far. It starts to get very, very iffy. Kyra Lewis is definitely on there for me. I think that's five. I'll get back to you on the sixth. We'll see how this plays out.
This is how the draft gets to be flat, as they call it, is a nice way. But this draft might have been flat from the beginning, frankly. Josh Lloyd said it yesterday. Some of these guys who we saw in the top six wouldn't go till 14 in most drafts. And if next year's draft is what we're talking about, certainly that would be the case. There are heavy trade rumors right now floating about something going on with the New York Knicks. But before we find out about that, let's see if Detroit jumps all over James Wiseman after trading Andre Drummond for a bag of balls last year at the trade deadline. They may have themselves a new center. Let's go to Matt Shook in Locked On Pistons.
What's happening? It's Matt Shook from Locked On Pistons with the seventh pick of the Locked On Podcast NBA Draft. We like how things have gone for us so far here on draft night. Three players fell to us that we're seriously considering, in addition to a possible trade down that we were offered and very much enticed with. Our needs, we need everything. We're bad. We've got a new general manager in Troy Weaver from Oklahoma City. This is his first time running his own draft room, so that's a variable that's been throwing a wrench into things, trying to read the tea leaves about the rumors that are out there about the Pistons leading up to the draft. When you don't have any young franchise players on your roster at the beginnings of a rebuild, no position is off the table for us to be drafting. But ideally, we would be drafting either our point guard of the future, a big switchable wing that's coveted in the league, or a center who can be the anchor of our defense going forward. Matt Shook, my dream scenario is a player like Onyeka Okongwu falling to us. That's who I like. He's number one on my big board, which most people think is crazy. But outside of that, one of the high ceiling guys falling, Ball, Edwards, Wiseman, that would be nice. So we're down to three players on this decision. Tyrese Haliburton is safe. He can play off the ball or on the ball. Fits into the defensive culture that we're trying to build. Denny Avdija is a guy who plays a valuable position, one of need for us, and has outer tier star potential. And then, of course, James Wiseman, who plays a position of lower value in the NBA than Avdija, but has the tools to be a multiple-time All-Star, something that the other prospects can't say. Many Pistons fans are turned off by Wiseman or any big because it gives them Andre Drummond flashbacks. My answer to that is if the number 7 pick in this draft has Andre Drummond's career, that's all the more reason to take the guy. That's the best first-round pick the Pistons have had in more than a decade. We are not considering trading up. We are rebuilding in an asset accumulation mode. However, we set up talks with the Celtics, and we're ultimately offered number 14, number 26, and 30, three first-round picks in this year's draft, four number 7. This is a deal that makes sense for us because if we want to take more cracks at finding a star and more difference-maker-type players for our roster, we left it hanging out there until we saw who the top 6 players were off the board in this draft. When it came to us, Boston officially made that offer as there was a player that they wanted that was still available. However, there also was a player that we wanted, and since we valued him more than the enticing chance of loading up on more prospects, we decided to make the pick. In fact, if this guy was off the board, we'd probably make that deal. We were strongly considering making it anyways, but we didn't. And instead, with the number 7 pick of the Locked On Podcast NBA Draft, the Detroit Pistons select James Wiseman of Memphis. We need studs here in Detroit. Wiseman is a wild card, but he has a chance to be a star, and we couldn't pass that up at number 7. He also works for our timeline of trying to be good in a couple few years down the road, and he's also a talented, high-value player that might be tradable sooner or also later, unlike some of the other guys out there who might just end up being solid career backups, back-of-the-rotation kind of guys.
Detroit does pull the trigger for number 7. Brad Rowland, what'd they get themselves?
I think generally the best player available with a few caveats. I think the Pistons are a team that definitely needs a lead ball handler, but that guy's not really available at this point in time. And because they don't have a center of the future, I know they have Christian Wood sort of in play, but Wiseman, as seen as a high upside prospect, I do have some concern about Wiseman, but considering where they're getting him here at 7, the value's just fine. And I think if you're looking for upside, he has as much as anybody that's still available. So I would sign off on this. It's not the absolute home run, but he's the top rated guy on my board. So it's just fine with me.
I'll advocate for the Pistons here real quick too. I think, you know, they're kind of poo-pooed because of the Blake Griffin deal and everything else, but between Sekou Doumbouya, who they drafted last year, a name probably nobody remembers, but who had an interesting rookie season when he finally got on the floor, and then Christian Wood, a free agent that they have, I think adding Wiseman there, you have an interesting athletic front court, you know, a lot of question marks, no clear star there, but this adds to sort of an identity for them.
All right, let's get Jeremy Wu, Sports Illustrated's breakdown of James Wiseman, who goes 7 to the Detroit Pistons.
James Wiseman falling all the way to number 7. I think that's great value for Detroit. The Pistons, in real life, I think would certainly be happy in this scenario. In terms of tools, you know, checks pretty much every box. You know, has just a great frame. He's, 7 feet. It's hard. Even we talk about the NBA is going away from guys like this, but it's still hard to find guys who just like physically occupy space the way that he does. And so I think Wiseman's a good pick here, a very good value. You know, there are guys who have him top 3, and a lot of people have him as the best center in the draft. So to get him at number 7 and as the second center off the board, it's hard to knock that. And, Detroit seems a team that really needs talent building forward. And I think, this gives them, you can walk away from this draft, you for sure have a piece, which I think, in a draft that not everyone is fully excited about, I think that's a pretty good outcome.
We have our first trade of the NBA mock draft. The Locked On Celtics have traded with Locked On Knicks, and the word is that the Knicks have traded the 8th pick to the Celtics for the 14th pick, the 26th pick, and the 30th pick. Interestingly enough, the Celtics, from what my sources are telling me, had offered the exact same thing to the Detroit Pistons, and the Pistons said no. They went one notch lower on the board, and the New York Knicks said yes. Again, the Celtics have acquired the 8th pick of the draft for the 14th, the 26th, and the 30th, and now immediately joining us, former NBA general manager and now co-host of the Hollinger and Duncan podcast, John Hollinger, to discuss the trade that's gone down, whether Detroit should have taken it, whether New York should have taken it, and whether the Celtics and Danny Ainge got themselves another steal. So, John, New York clearly came here to trade, or Boston maybe came here to trade up, and we have a deal done. The Knicks have traded the 8th pick to the Celtics for 14, 26, and 30. But here's what's interesting about this. According to my sources, the same offer was made to the Detroit Pistons in the 7th pick. So just principally on that deal, 14, 26, and 30. Should have Detroit taken it, and should have New York taken it at 8th?
I think it's an interesting, I mean, value-wise, like, it's pretty fair, I think. So I think in their particular situations, like, Detroit doesn't need to hit on another role player. They need to hit on high-end talent. So you're probably better off staying on at 7 if you're them. I do think this is exactly what Boston wants to do. They want to consolidate those 3 picks into one larger one, or one better one. If you look at their roster situation where they already have 15 guys under contract for next season and they're into the tax and whatnot, they want to either push these picks out to the future or at the very least consolidate them into fewer than 3. From the Knicks' perspective, this one's a little weird to me because they already have the 27th pick. So now you're picking 26 and 27 and 30. So you're in sort of the same situation that Boston is, where you really probably don't have 3 guys that you love that much to have all of them at once. And you're trying to trade at least one or two of them into future years or take stash picks or whatnot. So I don't love the idea from the Knicks' perspective. If you could get future picks out of a trade down, if you're the Knicks, I think you like it a lot better.
Unless the Knicks can compile 26, 27, 30, I think they have 38, and move back up to get a player they want. That would probably be the answer to that.
Yeah, but I mean, in general, the interest in the poo-poo platter in this draft, I think, is pretty minimal. So, I mean, a lot of teams are trying to move down, and they're having a hard time. So, for the Knicks to be... I don't know. I just think there's a lot of teams trying to kind of being a little hopeful about what they can do with draft trades that maybe isn't that realistic in this draft.
Well, that's John Hollinger's take on things. Guys, we see the first trade of the day taking place. The Celtics have moved to 8. Why did they go here?
I think Boston is so... asset, you know, they have so many assets already on the roster, and they sort of have a roster crunch. So everyone knows that they're looking to move up. I think this makes sense for Boston. It might even be an overpay in terms of actual capital, but because they have so many young players and so few roster spots, they want to consolidate. They're obviously have a guy that they want here, and for the Knicks, it makes sense to go down. So I think both sides, it makes sense, even though the value probably swings to New York. Boston's in a situation where they're kind of unique in the fact that they have 3 picks without actually needing 3 players.
I wonder what Boston's looking at here with this pick, trading these assets. We talked about Chad Ford's best remaining players, and Wiseman was one, and Halliburton was the next one. I don't really see it with Halliburton. He just barely gets to the free throw line. He can't create offense necessarily for himself. He's a decent catch and shoot guy, but I just don't really see it for him as a defender or as an offensive player. And giving up 3 picks, I could understand if someone that I thought was actually going to be an impactful player fell. We'll see. We'll see what they do. They could go in many different directions here. But the options that are still available, I would be cautious about throwing those picks out at them.
All right, let's go to the Locked On Celtics draft room and see what John Corrales has in store for the Celtics on the Locked On Podcast Network NBA Mock Draft.
Thanks. Yeah, I feel like I was able to accomplish a lot of the goals that the Celtics are trying to accomplish in this draft. I know these mock drafts can kind of go all over the place, but I feel like I was able to stay true to what the Celtics' plans are, which is to trade up and get an impact player for right now without really messing with the end of the Celtics bench, without adding any kind of complications to the roster. So the New York Knicks were able to give me the 8th pick in exchange for the Celtics' 3 draft picks at 14, 26, and 30. I think it's a deal that works out for both sides. Was looking at maybe moving up a little bit further, but able to get the player I was targeting after Killian Hayes was off the board, after Onyeka Okongwu was off the board. Tyrese Haliburton was really the next guy on my list, and he was still available at 8. So that's why I took Haliburton. Now, he comes in as an impact player right away. He's a guard with a nice wingspan. I think the Celtics can fix some of his defensive deficiencies, but he's a guy that can come in, learn the game from some really great players on the Celtics already, can make plays, can plug in and be a contributor off the Celtics bench. The Celtics don't need a star player. They don't need a superstar to come in here and try to take over the team. Haliburton is a guy that is going to come in, who's going to listen to the coach, who is going to be part of the team, part of the offense, work on some of those defensive deficiencies. And I think that he can be a contributor right away. The Celtics don't need much, but to have a guy that can playmake like he does, that can see the floor and make decisions at this young age already with some of the players that he's going to have around him, that's really going to open things up. You can put him on the floor with a Jason Tatum, with a Jaylen Brown, and he'll have players that he can pass to. He'll have players he can work off of. And so I think with that, his ability to attack, with his ability to shoot, catch and shoot, I think he can make an impact on the Celtics right away. And the Celtics, who need help off of their bench, can get some of that. Getting that through the draft, a guy on a rookie contract, is super, super important. To be able to do that right now in this situation where the Celtics are, I think this was a very strong pick for the Celtics, and I'm glad I was able to accomplish that. You can hear more about the draft from the Celtics' perspective on the Locked On Celtics podcast. For me, John Corrales, I'm the Boston Celtics beat reporter for MassLive.com. Back to you.
This is a bold move by Boston, trading 3 picks, coming up to get Tyrese Haliburton. He's one of my favorite players in the draft. If there's a player who, you know, I would give up a lot of stuff for in this range, I think he's one of the guys who I would target. So I like it. He's the type of guy who, especially when you're Boston, where you already have scorers in place, who can really, really accent what you already have on your roster. You know, Haliburton is a guy, you know, basically checks every box off the court. Teams love him. He's going to shoot it. He's a great passer. He's going to make everyone better. He's going to be a good guy to have around. You know, there's some mixed debate about his upside. But in a situation like this, where he's already walking onto a good team, it's a young team, he's not going to be asked to create all offense. I think it's pretty much a perfect situation for his development. So I think this is a nice move by Boston and a good value play with him slipping to number 8.
That is Jeremy Wu's breakdown of Tyrese Haliburton, and we've got more coming up for you as the two top players, Wiseman and Haliburton, go Washington, Phoenix, San Antonio, and Sacramento on the board. And I want to hear from our draft board. What player in this draft is one skill away from being a breakout player? And see what you have to say. Today's show is brought to you by Built Bar, the most delicious protein bar on the market. It is just fabulous. Should we just do a round of what everybody's favorites are? Josh Lloyd, what's your favorite Built Bar?
It is the cookies and cream.
And Brad Rowland, your favorite Built Bar?
Josh stole my answer. I always say that on my podcast. Cookies and cream is the one that I go back to
the
over
number
and over
one,
again, so I'm standing by it.
The number one pick is cookies and cream. Brendan Clean, have you?
I'm a mint guy.
Oh, a mint brownie guy. I might be. Yeah. I actually might have gone with orange as a surprise early second round pick that becomes. That's my Paul Millsap right there. The bars are covered 100% in chocolate. They're soft and chewy. Built Bar, 19 grams of protein, 180 calories, 5 grams of sugar, 5 grams of net carb. Go to builtbar.com while supplies last. Promo code locked on. 20% off your next order. That's locked on for 20% off your next order. Use the promo code locked on at builtbar.com. The Locked On NBA mock draft continues. Pick number 9, Washington, is on the clock right now. But guys, I want to ask you this. We got this flatline draft everyone's talking about. What is the player in this draft that's one skill away from being a breakout? There's going to be somebody in this group who adds a skill, gets better, whether it's the Kawhi. I mean, I'm not saying they're going to be Kawhi Leonard, but Kawhi Leonard's the example, right? Nobody thought he could shoot, didn't really realize he had a handle. He adds it in his NBA career, becomes a dramatically different player. Who's the player to you in this draft that is one skill away from being a breakout player, Brendan?
It's Denny Avdija for me, a guy who looks the part of a good shooter, looks the part of a solid all-around offensive player, but hasn't actually had that jump shot. If he can make good on the you know, nothing looks crazy about his form. He's been decent from the free throw line, a guy who you would think would be a pretty okay shooter. If his jump shot can come around, at least as a catch-and-shoot player, you could just see him slotting immediately into an offense and just being a nice role player on that team, if not better.
I think shooting is a good theme for this, and Avdija is a good idea for it. I would say even earlier in the draft, Isaac Okoro. Isaac Okoro is a guy who does everything that you would want on a basketball court other than shoot right now. If you could tell me that he was a good shooter, he would be unquestionably like a top 3 guy probably for me in this class. If he can shoot, I think there's still a path for him to be pretty good, but that's a sort of the definition of a swing skill for me. If he becomes a good shooter, look out.
And Josh Lloyd, what about you?
Yeah, I didn't want to go into Onyeka Okongwu again and talk shooting again. So I'm going to go a different direction, a guy that hasn't been picked yet, and that's Kyra Lewis. If he is able to finish at a higher rate and really attack the rim, his speed is electric. He's a good passer. He's a good shooter. I think he can be an okay defender, but if he is able to put pressure on the rim and attack and finish at a strong rate, I think he'll be a steal where he goes in the draft.
I will add in here, because I've actually watched a lot of these draft players, the best athlete I saw in the whole draft is Robert Woodard out of Mississippi State. He had the best athleticism that were NBA skills athleticism. So I don't know what the skill he has to add, but if he can add an NBA skill to his game, whether it's really becoming a great shooter or whether it's becoming, you know, being able to add some ball handling to him, he has the best athleticism along with Okoro, but he was drafted 5th, so I'm not including that into that. So I'm gonna jump in here at least on that question a little bit. Watching players that I've watched most of the 15 to 20 guys. I'm nowhere near the expert that any of you guys are in this draft. So interesting conversation there. Let's go to Washington. They're on the board with the number 9 pick of the NBA draft.
Heading into the 2020 NBA draft, the Washington Wizards are in need of, well, basically everything, especially on the defensive end, where the Wizards were last or near the bottom in every defensive metric that mattered. Giving up points around the rim? Yes, absolutely. Giving up three-pointers? You betcha. So defensively, they need a little bit of everything. But they could also use a little help with their shooting. The future of Davis Bertans, one of their deadliest threats from outside last season, is uncertain. The Wizards are making him a top priority in free agency, but it might not happen. The re-sign might not happen, and it could result ultimately in a sign and trade. So don't know what's going to happen with Davis, and obviously adding shooting is always a priority if you are looking to make damage in the NBA playoffs. But I think the thing that this team needs most is just someone that can help them win now. Coming off their appearance in the bubble, they are due to get back their all-star point guard in John Wall. He'll team back up with Bradley Beal in what could be one of the final chances for this Washington Wizards team to achieve something significant with that team of Wall and Beal. So if they can find someone in the draft that could further contribute to that effort next season, help get them to the playoffs, and not only the playoffs, but to do something significant within that playoffs, I think that would count as a dream scenario. It would have been great had James Wiseman fallen to them at this position. I think he would have fit that area of need in terms of rim protection and been at a position of need at the center position. But barring that and a trade-up scenario that did not materialize, The big decision at this point is going to be deciding between a couple of options. I think you've got Obi Toppin, a player that can help you on both ends of the floor. You've got Aaron Nesmith, who can help you with that shooting that you'll be missing from Bertans. And then you've got Denny Avdia, who is a little bit of a mystery at this point. Why did he fall so far? A lot of projections had him in the top five. Now all of a sudden he could be available for the Washington Wizards. But is he ready to help the team now? With Toppin, obviously you have some concerns about his age. You have some concerns about him being a little bit redundant with the pick last season of Rui Hachimura. But ultimately, the Washington Wizards decided to put those concerns away. And with the 9th selection in the 2020 Locked On NBA Mock Draft, the Wizards will indeed select Obi Toppin out of Dayton, multi-tool player, helps you on both ends of the floor. The Washington Wizards are thrilled about this pick.
At number 9, Obi Toppin is a nice value pick for Washington, who I think is a team that's going to be trying to win again sooner than later. Toppin getting experience, he was the best player in college basketball pretty much, I think, last year. So getting him, you can plug him in. He's going to give them offensive punch. Last year they took Rui Hachimura. I don't know about that fit necessarily, but in terms of just pure value, Toppin is a guy who can help them right away as they make a push for the playoffs. He's going to shoot it. He's going to space the floor. He's going to run the floor. Defensively, I think they're going to be some issues, but I think you can work around it, particularly if he hits his, high end potential offensively, where he's efficient and he can kind of do damage from different spots on the floor. So for Washington, especially here at number 9, it's a nice pick.
Time to go back over to the Chad Ford Big Board Expert Desk on our mock draft here. 3 picks in the book. We're through 9. Today, you may feel like there's been some steals, Chad Ford.
Absolutely. James Wiseman falling to 7, a guy who is number 2 on my board and could have arguably, had he played his full season at Memphis, been the number 1 pick. I know the league feels like they're transitioning away from big guys right now, and maybe that value is a little less, but I think James Wiseman here, absolute steal for Detroit at 7. Halliburton at 8. Again, I think this is a great move for the Knicks. He can play both backcourt positions, but probably given RJ Barrett that they're going to play him at the point, I think he's a major, major upgrade over what they currently have in New York right now. There's not a lot of sizzle to Halliburton's game, but he's one of the best young people in this draft. Great character, can do it all. I really, really like that pick at 8. And then Obi Toppin, who many people might say was the best basketball player in college basketball this year, slides to 9 really because of his age. Right, he's 22 years old. That's going to be the knock on him. At 9 to the Wizards will be interesting because they drafted a power forward, Rui Hachimura, last year. How he fits in with the Wizards at 9, I'm not really sure. But again, value here at 9, a guy who is a great athlete and who is going to be a terrific offensive player in the NBA. The question is on his defense.
The concern that we've heard voiced about Wiseman is that he's not Chris Bosh, he's not David Robinson offensively, and he's not Rudy Gobert defensively, and so he gets caught in the middle ground of centers. How do you disagree with that?
I think, first of all, we don't know what he is. That's where I would start. He didn't play enough games in Memphis to tell us at all what he's going to be. And so could he be Chris Bosh? Yeah, I think he could be. He's shown some signs that he can stretch the floor. Can he be an elite defender? He has all the physical tools to be an elite defender. He didn't show that at Memphis in the very small 3-game sample size that we saw. And so it's what you want to project, what he hasn't done about what he could do. I think that my draft analysis is you look at what a guy can do, not just at what he didn't do in that very small sample size. And I think just given the talent that's in this draft, Wiseman should have gone higher. I hear the knocks, but man, when you look at that physical talent that he brings to the game, that's a great pick at 7.
Who's the next best player on your board right now?
Okay, we're going to have to go with Patrick Williams out of Florida State, a guy that's been steadily moving up mocks all year. I've liked him really early. Another project, but a big upside player.
All right, we'll see where he goes as we continue. It is the Locked On Podcast Network NBA Mock Draft.
Brendan Kleen here with Locked On Suns on the clock at number 10 in the Locked On NBA Mock Draft. Really, from the Suns' perspective, what
our selection came down to here was between a trade and picking a guy who ended up slipping a fair bit to number 10 here. So let me tell you what I mean. I went into this thing expecting that, you know, the Suns need shooting, or they want more shooting. They could use some depth at backup guard, at backup forward, mostly, you know, or getting a point guard of the future. Those were sort of the three things all draft season that I think the Suns have been looking at. And then that's what I went into this looking for. The dream scenario for us would have been to have a stellar wing shooter type fall to us here at number 10, like a Devin Vassell, or even, I suppose, you know, like an Anthony Edwards, somebody like that, an Isaac Okoro, not an amazing shooter, but just a wing, a very smart wing player. Those were some of the guys we were looking at, and all of those were gone by the time we got to 10. So I had been thinking mostly we were going to have to do a trade. I just felt like there wasn't a player I really loved at 10. There wasn't a player who I thought really fit the Suns' desires that didn't feel like a reach. And so I thought, let's trade back. Let's get to somewhere in the middle, or, you know, late teens in this first round, where I can get some of the players like a Tyrell Terry or a Desmond Bane, these types of players that I really thought could be a good fit in Phoenix, but didn't feel right taking at 10. So talked to the Dallas Mavericks about a trade for involving potentially Jalen Brunson or DeLon Wright or Seth Curry to get that backup guard slot filled, and then moving back into one of their later first round picks. Didn't end up coming to fruition because they were unwilling to part ways with Seth Curry, who was my primary target. Talked to the Brooklyn Nets about Spencer Dinwiddie, a player who I think fixed that long-term point guard hole that the Suns have behind Ricky Rubio here in Phoenix. Didn't get enough of a bite there. Couldn't find a deal that worked. They opted to hold on to Dinwiddie instead of parting ways with him. This would have been the 10th pick and Kelly Oubre Jr. As far as all of our negotiations were concerned. That's the Suns' primary trade chip on an expiring contract, a guy who missed the bubble for them and was not around during their 8-0 run in Orlando. So an expendable piece as far as the Suns have one, their most expendable piece at least. So the last trade I looked at involved Anthony Edwards Jr., who was selected second overall by the Golden State Warriors, where the Warriors would absorb Kelly Oubre into their big old trade exception that they still have lurking, and I would get back Anthony Edwards. They would take the 10th pick. But in the end, I went with Denny Avdija, a player who I did not expect to be available at 10, somebody who I really didn't even contemplate the fit for with the Suns all that much in a really serious way, because I just figured, you know, his upside is pretty big as a perfect sort of versatile team forward. But in the end, that is who I went with. He just has too much talent to pass up. I think the Suns will be a little worried about his jump shot, but I know that they like him as a player. You know, they're not going to move up to go get him. They're not really expecting him to fall to 10, similar to where I was, but I know that that's a type of guy that they would like. A smart player, somebody who makes the right decisions, play multiple positions, and can be a role player on offense right away in his NBA career, as far as I'm concerned. So very excited to get Denny. Not exactly positive how he fits into this roster, but that's a nice problem to have, to fit a promising young player into a deep young roster. So that's where we went. Locked On Suns takes Denny Avdija, and we'll figure it out later. None of those trades seem too exciting, so we take the talent, we take the player, and figure out how to put him onto this young roster as we move toward a playoff run in 2021.
Denny Avdija is a nice value pick here for Phoenix. You know, I do wonder, you know, with their roster, if it's a fit, just, you know, they have so many forwards, but at the same time, sometimes you just got to go for talent. I can see that being the case here. You know, he's a player who a lot of teams feel comfortable with. You know, I'm not as high on him as some, but I think with his size, with his feel for the game, and noting how young he is, I think there's a pretty good chance, you know, if you're an optimist, at least, and, you know, in this case, you're at number 10, some of that risk is mitigated, right? But, that he can be a guy who, you know, can play on the ball a little bit, can play off the ball a little bit, will space the floor, will be able to make some plays. And I think in theory that fits well with Devin Booker, and the guys that they have. So defensively, there may be some concerns with him. We'll see how that manifests in the NBA. I think right away we'll be able to see athletically how he holds up. But I think it's good value at number 10, and I think Phoenix would be happy with that.
Phoenix adds the Israeli player at 10. I've seen him at some points as high as 4, so that's a slip in our Locked On NBA mock draft. Before that, Obi Toppin went number 9, rejoined here by Josh Lloyd, Brandon Kleen, and Brad Rowland. Josh, what's your thoughts of what we've seen so far?
I really dislike that Obi Toppin pick to Washington, a guy who is going to be 23 at the beginning of March, so super old as a prospect, a guy that can't move, really. Like, his hips seem like they're fused at the joints. He dominated at a lower level, but that doesn't necessarily mean anything. And they just drafted Rui Hachimura, who's a similar guy that struggles defensively and I don't really know how he fits into the modern NBA. I understand that you might think that he is the best player available. I would highly contest that, and I don't like that selection at all for Washington.
They needed an upside pick there. Like, that's a roster that's bleak beyond belief with the two. Well, Beal's a good contract, a great player, but, you know, heavy contract, and then John Wall, who we all know is weighing them down. They needed to shoot higher than that. That, you know, it's very much like that Hachimura pick last year in a similar slot in the draft. You can't keep taking these guys that are such clear ceilings and expect to get out of this mess that they're in.
So who's the top player left on your board, Brad Rowland?
I would say at this moment it's either Tyrese Maxey or Patrick Williams, and those guys are about even. Williams is certainly seems to be rising all over the place in the NBA draft circles, and Maxey's a guy I've always been higher on than the consensus. It's one of those two. They're very different players, and both guys who I think are not necessarily in the mainstream just yet, but those two are sort of a cut above everybody else that I have.
Well, the 11th pick will go to San Antonio. Jeff Garcia is standing by in the Spurs draft room. Let's go to Jeff Garcia of Locked On Spurs.
Hey, this is Jeff Garcia, host of Locked On Spurs. Perhaps the glaring need for the San Antonio Spurs heading into the 2020 NBA draft is size, whether it be in the man in the middle or out in just in the perimeter, your 3-and-D basic guys. The Spurs had one. His name is Kawhi Leonard. Well, and we all know how that happened. And last season, it was quite obvious the Spurs lacked that perimeter defense or a guy that can defend multiple positions out on the court. And that's exactly what the Spurs need to address in the upcoming draft. The dream scenario for the San Antonio Spurs would have been that they win the entire 2020 NBA draft lottery, get that number one pick. But outside of that, right now I think the dream scenario would be for the Spurs to move up in the draft. Let's face it, the Spurs are years away from being a title contender as they used to be. And the way they became a title contender was through the draft via Tim Duncan, Monte Ginobili, Tony Parker, and even a draft day trade with the Pacers for Kawhi Leonard. That would be the dream scenario for the Spurs, to get back to that mode of rebuilding through the draft, hoping some of their younger guys in the current roster develop and become all-stars. I think that is the perfect scenario for San Antonio moving forward in their next chapter of their franchise. Well, when the Spurs, or in this case, the Locked On Spurs, the number was called that we were on the board, you know, obviously I'm looking for size, whether it be somebody in the middle or out in the perimeter, as I mentioned earlier, a 3-and-D wing guy. And in real life, in the NBA draft that's coming in a few days, the Spurs, if they stand pat at number 11 and make no moves, they should be able to address that need when their name is on the board. But nevertheless, for our sake here, the mock Locked On NBA draft, I saw Denny Avdija falling down. I was going to grab him had he became available. I know the Spurs need defense, but he could be a once-in-a-lifetime player. Also, too, I saw Patrick Williams was still on the board. I was hoping for Onyeka Okongwu to fall to San Antonio at number 11. I think he is the prototypical Spur, or the type of player the Spurs desperately need right now on the roster, but he went picks way ahead of San Antonio. So basically, it came down to Patrick Williams. It also came down to Aaron Nesmith and Sadiq Bey that were available when Locked On Spurs were up. So I decided to throw it out there. Let me see if I can contact some other fellow Locked On NBA hosts for a trade, because I really wanted Okongwu. And I reached out to Locked On Hornets. They pretty much scoffed at the idea. They shot that down. They said they're fine with the trade proposal, offered them DeMar DeRozan and the number 11 pick. That did not fly. Now, The Locked On Magic host, Philip, he offered a trade, pretty much said their picks and anybody on the roster. But when I looked at the roster, yeah, there was, I don't think the Magic had anything that the Spurs could use moving forward. At the end of the day, I went with Patrick Williams. I think Williams fits the mold exactly what the Spurs need, and that is on the defensive end. He's a guy that can defend multiple positions. Very young, 19 years old, might be a project, but the Spurs are in a rebuilding mode right now. They're trying to see who they have or what these players have in them as far as an NBA player moving forward next season. And next season is going to be critical for the Spurs and this current crop, barring any type of significant trade. The Spurs are going to be evaluating talent in the bubble. Popovich basically said that he's looking at the bubble games to see who wants to be part of the organization and who doesn't. So I think this is a big time for the Spurs franchise. And if the Spurs do end up selecting Patrick Williams, I think he fits well with the team. As mentioned, he is young. He does address that defensive perimeter guy, a guy who can defend multiple positions and can score. But again, the Spurs' primary need is that wing defender, and he gives that to San Antonio in droves. It'll be interesting to see if the G League is going to happen next season because of the pandemic and the shortened season. And if he doesn't, that's great, because I think a guy at number 11, Patrick Williams in this mock case, should get plenty of burn in the NBA. Once again, I am Jeff Garcia, host of Locked On Spurs. Make sure to subscribe to Locked On Spurs wherever you get your favorite podcast.
Patrick Williams has been one of the buzziest names, I think, in the last, you know, couple weeks leading up to the draft. As a guy who has played his way, or maybe not played his way, right, into the top 10. But, you know, as a young guy, one of the youngest, or I think he's the youngest college player in the draft, with, you know, an interesting skill set, pretty well-rounded, can do a little bit more than he showed at Florida State, and has a great frame that you can see holding up defensively, you know, being able to play both forward spots, maybe slide down and play center in really small lineups. You know, he's kind of where the NBA is going. Now, he's not a good player yet, and he's not a guy who has, you know, a clear NBA skill at this point in time, which is the scary part. But I think for San Antonio, which is a team that can trust its own player development infrastructure, getting a player like that at 11 is pretty ideal. And it's, you know, they have so many guards. I think getting a front court piece is nice here. So I think, you know, it's a pretty strong pick here at number 11.
Back to the GM desk with John Hollinger, co-host of the Hollinger and Duncan podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network. We have a ton of trade rumors that are going on. It doesn't seem as though any of these deals have come to fruition, and unless Sacramento pulls off something in a second. But according to our sources, Phoenix was talking about a deal with the Nets that was an Oubre and 10 or a Dinwiddie and 19 to try to do something with the Brooklyn Nets. The Hornets were in trade talks that never materialized, reporting around DeMar DeRozan and 11 for the third pick with Charlotte to go get Okongwu. What's your thought on the fact that just the getting to the finish line on these, or did any of these sound like deals that should have been made?
You know, that Oubre Dinwiddie one is kind of interesting to me. Certainly from Phoenix's perspective, I can understand why you'd want to do that. Rather than draft Killian Hayes or Kira Lewis, just go ahead and get your guard by trading down. They showed that, I mean, Oubre's a nice player, but they showed they don't need him in Phoenix necessarily. And he's going into the final year of his deal. I do think he could come to Brooklyn and play a role next to Durant and Kyrie Irving, and so you could see the logic there and why that would have potentially made sense. I thought that was an interesting trade proposal. On the DeRozan thing, I've heard other people say, oh, the Spurs should use DeRozan to move up, and I'm like, what are we talking about? The same guy? Like that DeRozan at $28 million doesn't enable you to move up. Like, you're paying somebody to take that. Like, I'm sorry, you can't move up with that. The other obvious issue with that, he has the player option. You'd have to accept the player option before you could enact a trade. So that would get a little tricky with the timing of the draft and his option potentially.
And that's getting interesting news, by the way, developing just from a news standpoint. some of those, they may make option date before the draft, making the DeRozans, the Haywards, the Conleys, the Cantors of the world more tradable on draft day than they would be otherwise. We'll see. Sacramento's on the board with the 12th pick. Let's go to Matt George in the Kings draft room with Locked On Kings.
Well, this may be a short and abnormal offseason, but for the Sacramento Kings, it's been a very busy offseason, and many would say a very positive offseason with a lot of changes that they have made. Hello, my name is Matt George, host of the Locked On Kings podcast, and as we approach this NBA draft, the Kings have a new front office headed by Monty McNair, formerly with the Houston Rockets. His front office is in place. The Kings have made some changes to their coaching staff. However, head coach Luke Walton is still there. He just has the help of Alvin Gentry and a couple new assistant coaches to hopefully fix some of the mistakes that he made last season. You have a new broadcaster in Sacramento. Mark Jones from ESPN will take over the majority of the play-by-play duties for the Sacramento Kings. So those hires, those offseason moves have gone really well for the Kings. Now it's about player personnel. And as we approach this draft and the opening of free agency, Kings have a lot of major decisions to make. What is the team's biggest need right now, other than a playoff appearance, is someone at least in the draft who fills that 3 and D wing position. The Kings don't have a lot of wing depth. Harrison Barnes kind of owns that 3 spot. Many believe he should play the 4. Now with Monty McNair coming in from the Houston Rockets system, where we know they like to play small, will Harrison Barnes get more time at the 4 spot? If that's the case, you need more wing depth. You need more wing depth anyway. So the biggest need for the Sacramento Kings right now is a 3-and-D type player who can space the floor, fit well next to De'Aaron Fox on the offensive end. Also Marvin Bagley, of course, give him space to work on the inside. And then defensively, someone who can just guard at least 2 through 4, someone who is not a defensive liability, someone who will give you the effort on a nightly basis and hopefully make some big plays when needed. Dream scenario for the team, at least for me, there's two. One is Devin Vassell being available for the Kings at 12, which might be the case in real life, but certainly wasn't the case here in our mock draft in the Locked On Podcast Network mock draft. And dream scenario number two is the Kings finding a way to move on from Buddy Hield and make it a solid deal. Now, I shopped Buddy Hield to a ton of different podcast hosts. We talked about trades that involve draft picks, trades that didn't even involve draft picks, because the Kings ultimately have to make a decision between Bogdan Bogdanovic and Buddy Hield. They might end up sticking with the two until the trade deadline next season, whenever that's going to be. We'll have to wait and see what Monty McNair wants to do there. But I shopped Buddy Hield, I looked around, really couldn't find a deal, ended up sticking at 12. What's interesting is that in real life, Monty McNair apparently is not shopping Buddy Hield at all, or has yet to this point. That might pick up before the draft itself, but that information came out via an anonymous general manager in a Forbes article. And I thought that was interesting. I highly doubt the Kings will not be answering calls or at least listening to offers for Buddy Hield on draft night. So, who are the Sacramento Kings taking at number 12? Well, since Devin Vassell is off the board, I took my next favorite prospect. Thankfully, he was available. That is Aaron Nesmith, the sharpshooter. I am so excited to see what he can do at the NBA level. I'm also very cautiously optimistic that he'll be able to carry over his success from that shortened college season to the NBA. Also, I have hopes defensively that he won't be a complete liability. And if the Kings do end up moving on from Buddy Hield, Nesmith, at least in the short term, not a horrible replacement. He's certainly not as good as Buddy Hield yet, but maybe he could be. So the Kings take the sharpshooter, Aaron Nesmith, with the number 12 pick in the 2020 NBA draft.
I like Aaron Nesmith as a player overall. I just think that, in my opinion, he's the best shooter in the draft. I think that guys like that, as we've seen over and over again, particularly in the playoffs, you know, players who are truly high-level floor spacers are always going to be really valuable, and I think he has a chance to be that. The rest of his skill set is not as fleshed out, and that's sort of what's going to determine whether he is a specialist or if he's a starting caliber player. But I think with the body type he has, I think he should be able to hold up enough defensively. Like I compare him to like a Joe Harris type of player. And so I think it's a nice pick here for Sacramento, just in terms of if he's the best player on their board. You can't have too much shooting, and you know, not knowing what comes of Buddy Hield if he gets traded. I think this is a good pick that sort of fits what they need.
With day two in the book, Sacramento wrapping it up by taking the sharpshooter out of Vanderbilt. We went all over the map. We got your Florida State product. We went to Israel, and we went to the elite academic institutions of Vanderbilt in our last three picks, Chad. How do you see day two wrapping up here?
Pretty much followed exactly what I had on my big board. I mean, Patrick Williams here at 10 to the Suns. This is an upside pick all the way. Williams only averaged 9 points a game at Florida State as a freshman, but look at his versatility, his ability to defend threes and fours, his ability to shoot the basketball. He's a guy that maybe with another year at Florida State would have gone much higher in this draft. Denny Avdia is a guy that, you know, I've had trouble falling in love with. He's super aggressive. He put up big numbers in the Israeli league, especially when he came back from COVID. But his jump shot scares me. Shot it okay from three, but when you look at that free throw percentage, that's the thing that's really scary. It's difficult to project players like him in the league if they don't become elite three-point shooters, and I'm just not sure he's going to get there. And then you're talking about, with the 12th pick in the draft, Aaron Nesmith, who was the best shooter in college basketball last year, shooting such a premium in the NBA. I don't know that he shoots 52% from three like he did as a sophomore at Vanderbilt, but if he shoots anything even close to that, he's a steal here at 12.
He's Chad Ford. It's the NBA Big Board is the podcast. There's a ton of great episodes. He and Hollinger, former Memphis Grizzlies GM, got together to look at all possible trade projections for you this week. It's all there for you. It's at Chad Ford's NBA Big Board. Great guests along the way. Tony Jones of The Athletic, Brad Rowland has joined him from our main desk experts as well, and John Hollinger. So catch all of those on Chad Ford's NBA Big Board. Day two is in the books. Pick 7 through 12. Wiseman and Halliburton lead the day. Obi Toppin goes 9, much to Josh Lloyd's dismay. Denny Avdia gets taken by 10 by Phoenix, and no one's criticized Brandon Clean for his Suns pick. By the way, just a note, Brandon Clean's been taking picks for the Suns. This will be his fourth straight year, I believe, in our NBA mock draft. And his roster on the mock drafts of past years would include, Brendan, would you like to share what you've drafted?
We were on the right side of history back in 2018 with the Luka Doncic, DeAndre Ayton thing. And then last year we were able to snag Brandon Clark at number 6, a pick the Suns ultimately traded and made a peculiar choice with Cameron Johnson. But look, it's really nice. I can't lie. And we got lucky again with Denny Avdia falling to 10. So you guys are around the network, keep doing us some favors.
All right, so the Suns are rolling there. Your pick the other year was pretty good too. I can't remember who it was, but
it was Jonathan Isaac.
Oh yeah, that was really good. That'd be a heck of that Suns team is way better than the one the Suns have put together. Congratulations. All right, back to reaction to day two here. Brad Rowland, what have we seen happen here, and how is this? And how are you surprised or not surprised on how this is playing out?
Nothing truly shocking. I think a lot of relatively safe picks. We've talked about it before, but the Obi Toppin pick didn't make a ton of sense to me just from the team-building standpoint. And then the last pick, Aaron Nesmith is a guy who I think is a reasonable value at number 12 overall, but in a fit sense, I don't really see that in Sacramento. I think the Kings have this backlog already with Buddy Hield and Bogdan Bogdanovic, at least the rights to him at this moment in time, where Nesmith is pretty duplicative with those guys. So I'm not really sure what the plan is there for Sacramento. Well, I guess only time will tell in free agency, but that would have me shaking my head a little bit.
Yeah, same. Nesmith, I think, is interesting. And obviously, look at his numbers, 52% shooting from three. That's unbelievable, but it was only in 14 games. So that's going to come down. And as a freshman, he shot just 34% from three. So which one of those is real? I think he is a good shooter. I don't think there's any debate there. But this is a guy who averaged under one assist per game. So you're talking about black holes, and assisted turnover ratio at 0.5. It's ridiculously low. And with, as Brad said, Hield and Bogdanovic there, unless with the Kings guys are expecting either Bogdanovic to leave or Hield to get traded, which both those things have pretty decent probabilities. I don't really see the value for Nesmith at number 12 because you're banking on him being an elite shooter. And if he's not, then I don't know what else he does.
Look, and not to bag on Sacramento because we can all do that every year, right? But I think it's another situation concern where, you know, we don't really know what if the head coaching situation is going to stay consistent in that organization. We have the fit concerns as far as how's he going to get on the court. Are there players ahead of him who are going to block him there? And, you know, I got to interview Neesmith earlier this year. I think he's a guy who has a good head on his shoulders, worked really hard this year. But I think Jerry Stackhouse at that Vanderbilt program made a real impact on him, you know, giving him more responsibility on defense and asking him to do a little more on offense. Not that he really met that task, you know, as a playmaker, but I worry that Sacramento is not a good landing spot for him.
What's more likely, Marvin Bagley passing to Neesmith or Neesmith passing to Marvin Bagley? Since both of them have like one assist a game.
Honestly, I think the world would implode if they just imagine an alley-oop between those two. I don't think the TV would just cut out. You wouldn't be able to see it.
The ball would disappear.
Marvin Bagley is going to go take the run and see if he can play more games and assists in his career. It's rather impressive. All right, that is day two of the NBA draft. Picks 7 through 12 are done. 13 through 18 come to you tomorrow. That's going to be some interesting ones. What does New Orleans do? How about the New York Knicks, who are now sitting at 14 after the trade that just happened with the Celtics? Orlando is on the board. 16 is Portland. 17 is Minnesota. And 18 is Terrell Terry. And we'll find out who each of these guys have as their top six players on the board. And we start the day tomorrow. It's the Locked On NBA Mock Draft. Picks 7 through 12 are in the books. Make sure you go back and get 1 through 6 in case you missed them. 5-day special here on the Locked On Podcast Network.